Oh, Hare Krishna to all of you. I'm Dr. Keshav Anand from India, as you heard. And I have, after passing my medical in 98, I read Bhagavad Gita, various Vedas, scriptures of India, and also various other literatures, Bible, Quran, and even Zen, Chinese religion, and all of this. I did some research, I studied under various teachers, and then also Bhagavad Gita, and that's what I thought, let me share this knowledge with you all, and let us try to understand how to become happy and satisfied in this life. And of course, happiness and satisfaction is very rare, especially in this country. People are stressed. And this wisdom will help you to become peaceful, satisfied and happy. So I'm going to discuss something about Gita. Culmination of science and spirituality. Bhagavad Gita is a book. If you go to India, if you ask what book, one book you name, which you read, that's Bhagavad Gita. If you ask any scholar of spiritual knowledge, there are many books in Hindu pantheon, Hindu scriptures, we can call as Hindu. But we have four Vedas, we have Upanishads, we have Puranas. If you talk about scriptures, there are many books. It's not just one book. Then we have Itihas, Ramayana, Mahabharata. But if you combine all those books, and you want to put all that knowledge in one book, that is Bhagavad Gita. Now, what is this book? Let's talk about it. Yeah. Oh, I have to. Okay, fine. Okay. Many scholars, many scientists, politicians, and even philosophers, they have praised this book. So, Mahatma Gandhi, everybody knows. He used to read Gita. And this is Aldous Huxley, humanist, pacifist. He praised Gita. And this is interesting. He told Bhagavad Gita is the most systematic statement of spiritual evolution. He's not Indian. He was a philosopher. And he read Gita and he was impressed. And he didn't tell Gita is a religious book. It's a sectarian book. He told it's the most systematic statement. I'll come to this point, systematic. How Bhagavad Gita explains us from A to Z. From basics of spirituality to the highest level of spirituality, that is God and love of God. And it goes in a very logical and rational fashion. Spiritual evolution, yeah. This is, oh, I just got it wrong. These are two saints of India, famous Aurobindo, Shankaracharya. They have praised Bhagavad Gita. And these are some philosophers, Western philosophers. They also praised Bhagavad Gita. David Thoreau, Wilhelm von Humboldt, they praised Gita. They used to read Gita. Most beautiful, perhaps the only true philosophical song existing in any known tongue. Bhagavad Gita is a book of philosophy. It is not a sectarian book. It is not for Hindus. If you read Bhagavad Gita, you will understand that it is talking about eternal principles. For example, when you buy this television, you get a manual. You buy a car, you buy any gadget, you get a manual. Bhagavad Gita is a manual for life. Bhagavad Gita will teach you how to think. Is there any subject in any university which helps you which teaches you how to think? No subject. Is there any subject which teaches you how to live life? No subject. What is more important to us than living life and thinking? And there's no subject for that. The society is largely materialistic. And we are dealing with matter, but we have forgotten mind. We are dealing with body, but we have forgotten soul. We are dealing with information, but we have lost wisdom. And that is why we are unhappy. We are dissatisfied. And then this one of the physicians, he praised Bhagavad Gita. Profound influence on the spirit of mankind by its devotion to God, which is manifested by action. So, question is not that so many people have praised Bhagavad Gita. Question is, why these people are praising Bhagavad Gita? And the question is, before that, all the scriptures of India, all the scriptures, they praise Bhagavad Gita, not only scientists, philosophers. This is one scripture, Vaishnavya Tantra Sar, it praises Bhagavad Gita. This is very interesting, you just have a look. That fool who wants to attain liberation by constant yoga practice. Yoga is famous here. People do yoga. That's good. That's not bad. But the point is, this book says, anybody who wants to practice yoga without the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, he's fit to be laughed at even by a child. Without knowledge, meditation will not give its result. So without knowledge, meditation is ignorance. Without meditation, knowledge is theory. Both has to combine. Both. It is said in scriptures, any mantra, any meditation, any yoga practice you do, you should have some rational basis for that. This is a good verse. There are many Puranas. They also praise Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita is my supreme knowledge. These are good verses. And then, Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all scriptures, special in itself. Padma Puran, Agni Puran, Mahabharata, Harivansh Puran, you don't need to remember these names. The point is, Bhagavad Gita is praised by all. All scriptures, philosophers, scientists, and politicians, everybody praises Bhagavad Gita. Why? There has to be something in that book, no? It is not people who are reading Bhagavad Gita, they are praising. It is not who belong to Hindu's religion, they are praising. It is everybody from diverse fields. These are the three questions which we should have in mind. When so many Western philosophers and scientists praise Gita, why Gita is considered to be a religious and a mythological book? This is the question. People think Gita is a mythological book. It's a religious book. If so many scriptures praise Gita, why so many scriptures praise Gita when Vedas are considered to be the essence of all scriptures? In India, if you go, Vedas are considered topmost. But still, all Vedas also praising Gita. Why? And why? What is so unique about Gita? These three questions we are going to deal now. Actually, four. Gita is considered to be a religious book. Is it or is it not? Is it a mythological book? Yes or no? Why so many scriptures praise Gita? And what is unique about Gita? Okay, let's discuss the first question. Gita, a religious book. So, in Western world, religion is considered to be sectarian. Its connotations are bad for religion. But in Sanskrit, religion means dharma. The word, Hindi word, Sanskrit word for religion is dharma. Religion means faith. Dharma means duty. There is no English translation of the word dharma. Religion is very close to that, but it's not. Faith can change, but duty cannot change. You can have some faith today, another faith tomorrow. But we have a spiritual duty. We have duty of body, isn't it? We have some social duties. Our friends, our parents, our relatives. We have duty towards our nation. That's okay. We have duty towards our college. Similarly, we have duty towards spirituality, towards God. That's important to understand. That can never change. That is why religion is dharma. Okay, this is Bhagavad Gita. Religion without philosophy, sentiment, or sometimes fanaticism. People follow religion without philosophy. And what they end up in? Fanaticism. Terrorism in mostly. Like people don't understand why they're following religions. And then they fight with each other. And philosophy without religion is mental speculation. If you simply have some kind of philosophy and no religious understanding, it will be you are simply speculating. There are so many philosophies, solipsism, then materialism, atheism, agnosticism, so many philosophies, idealism, dualism. There are so many philosophies. But if you don't understand religious concepts, spiritual concepts, it will be just speculation. You can end up discussing and arguing, but no satisfaction, no happiness. This is an interesting quote. Bhagavad Gita is truly revelation of life's wisdom, which enables philosophy to blossom into religion. Bhagavad Gita helps to blossom philosophy into practical action. And how it does? Okay, this is good. How it does? This interesting definition of philosophy. Bhagavad Gita defines philosophy in one line. Any philosophy, if it is to be true, it should help us to understand that after attaining which there is no other greater gain. Any philosophy, if it is true, it should give satisfaction and happiness. Otherwise, that philosophy, any philosophy which is making you more confused, that's not a philosophy. You can be called as philosopher, but it's not a philosophy. This is a very nice definition. Upon gaining which there is no other greater gain. So nice. This is a philosophy of life. Present day, we all people, we are so much dependent on external things, isn't it? For happiness, we want laptops, we want cell phones, we want car. But have you ever thought, does these things really give us happiness? Or they entangle us? Are we really becoming free or slaves of these things? We have become addict to these gadgets. Is there any other way that we can get happiness without these things? There is. That's what Gita says. You don't need these things to be happy. But it is, we are trained to think like that by advertisements, by society. If you don't have a laptop, you'll die. I don't know, maybe in America it happens, you know. People are so addicted to laptop. Now India also everywhere. If you don't have cell phone, this. What do you do when you're sitting on airport? You know, anytime. You're free, people just take cell phone, start playing games. It's absolute waste of time. This is nonsense entertainment. Entertainment will not help you to think deep. And that's what society is doing to us. You have to understand that we are not supposed to be... If everybody is going to a well, drowning in a well, you're not supposed to drown in that. It is said blind after blind. This is society. People are blind and we are just going behind them without thinking. Bhagavad Gita is inviting you to think. Think. It is very common sense. Just think. Suppose I give you an example. For example, if I tell you, you can be very happy without any gadgets, without your luxuries, just sit in one room, close your eyes, and you'll be happy. Now, this is my proposal to you all. Will you go to malls and shop and bring laptops, movies, or that? If you are happy sitting in one room closing your eyes, will you want anything else or not? Anybody? If suppose theoretically I give you this proposal, everybody close your eyes, okay, fine, and you're happy, satisfied. You want nothing in life. You're satisfied within yourself. Gita says, one who is satisfied within, he is a most happy person. He is not dependent on anything else. If this happens to you one day, so much dollars you save, isn't it? You have to spend dollars. You don't have to shop and go and waste your money and buy so many clothes, so many things. I was seeing one census, I was reading. Every year, I think, I don't know how many millions of laptops people throw. And out of those the laptops which are thrown, 99% laptops are functional. They are okay, but people will throw that. Maximum number of fridges, refrigerators people throw. Every year, they want new. They think that these things will give happiness. You waste money. Simple. Isn't it a nice proposal? It's good, no? If suppose you're happy and you don't need anything, you save your money, you save time, you don't end up messing around with people, you know. Okay, satisfied. Oh, you know, there's one story. You know this Alexander the Great? Everybody knows? Alexander? He conquered, he started from Greece, Macedonia. He conquered all Mediterranean. He came to India. India, when he came, there was a saint who was sitting beneath a tree. And Alexander told, "My dear saint, you should bow down in front of me. I am the king of this world. I have conquered the entire world." That saint told, "Well, if I don't bow down then," and he said, "I'll kill you, that's all. I'm the king." So that saint told, "Okay, fine, you can kill me. But the point, I have to ask you a question." He asked him a question. "Okay, fine. What's the aim of your life?" And Alexander, he never heard this question, first of all. If you ask people this question, "What is the aim of life?" 50% will go blank. Aim, what that means? "I don't know the aim of my life." 50% will answer, "My aim of life is money or whatever it is." So he told, "Okay, my aim is to conquer the entire world. That's my aim." And then that saint told, "Okay, after conquering the entire world, what do you do? Okay, suppose, hypothetical, you've conquered the entire world. Now what?" Then he told, "Okay, then I'll sit nicely and enjoy. I'll be satisfied, comfortable." He told, "That's what I'm doing now." "Why do you want to conquer the entire world? I'm happy. No, you just come and sit with me." See the point? This is the point. Alexander, he was blind. He became blind by his greed for conquer, power. And he forgot that whatever he's doing is for happiness. And if he can get happiness without doing all these things, why do waste our time and energy? That is what Bhagavad Gita is going to teach us. Upon gaining which, there is no other greater gain. This is how Bhagavad Gita also defines religion. Interesting definition. Bhagavad Gita doesn't say religion is Hindu, Muslim, Christianity. This is all fanaticism. Religion has to do with soul. Soul is not Hindu, Christian or Muslim. Soul is soul. If I take a Hindu, if I take a Muslim, if I take a Christian, and if I cut their finger, what will come out? What's going to come out? Blood? From Christians it will be some white fluid, from Muslims it will be blue, and from Hindus it will be some purple. It doesn't happen like that. It's same. So it's all the same. If I hit somebody, you'll feel pain. Prabhupada used to say, everybody will feel pain. Pain is universal. Blood is universal. Soul is universal. There's nothing sectarian in that. Religion is defined by Bhagavad Gita. Changing one's nature is called religion. Any process you follow, if your nature and habits are not changing, you are not following religion. You can be good Christian, good Muslim, good Hindu, whatever. You have to understand the concepts. You have to understand the fundamentals of life, laws of life. There's nothing, 1 + 1 = 2 always. It's not going to change in America. No? Oh, in America 1 + 1 = 2, is it? Am I correct or not? Or it's 1 + 1 = 3 here? It's 2. Everywhere it's 2. Sun is everywhere the same. Similarly, religion is same. Religion has those laws which will help you to lead a life happily. That's all. And if you're following some religion and your nature is not changing, many people say, "I'm religious," and the habits don't change. What's the point, you know? What's the point? You're the same man, same woman, same person. Very interesting definition. Is there any sectarian in this? Nothing, no? Nothing? It's common sense. Scriptures are common sense. Actually, you don't even have to read scriptures to understand what is spirituality. You just have to sit and think. But to inspire thinking, these books are there. You can observe this. You don't have to prove this. You can observe it. This is the truth. Simple. Do you need a book to prove that you have pain? If you go to a doctor, you say, "My dear doctor, I have pain." And if doctor says, "First prove it that you have pain," will you go to the doctor? You will tell the doctor, I think you need a psychiatrist. You know? There's a problem with you. Pain is pain. Simple. Similarly, if a religion helps you to understand the universal truths of this world, it is there in front of our eyes, but we can't see. We can't see. That's the problem. Smoking is injurious to health, yet people smoke. Drinking alcohol, lung cancer, yet people drink alcohol. It is there, but we can't see. Why we can't see? Because we don't have wisdom. We don't sit and think. That's the point. Bhavita is saying, please start thinking. Please start thinking. We'll give you the guidelines. Start thinking and observe this word. You will find this word, what we are saying. Okay. This is why people think Bhagavad Gita is a religion. You see, many people came to India and there were two universities, Takshila and Nalanda. You know this? You heard about that? And those were the center of this world for knowledge. But then many Greek philosophers, Egyptians used to come to this university and read scriptures and understand knowledge and Bhagavad Gita. Then Muslims came. Muslim invasion, Mughals invasion, Arab invasion, if you read Indian history. They came and they destroyed these universities. They burned Vedas. When they burned this university, it was burning for 4 months. They had so many knowledge, so many books. 4 months. If you burn this university, how many months it will burn? I don't know. But that university was burning for 4 months. So many manuscripts. And then this knowledge, whatever knowledge was there, they stole it. They took to Arab countries. They translated it. And then there were crusades, Christianity, Jerusalem, fights. And then this knowledge went to Arab, to Europe. It was translated into their language, Hebrew and whatever. And then the age of enlightenment began in Europe with Newton, 17th century. You all know this history, everybody? All knowledge went from India. But what happened in the process? In the process, scriptures remained in India, but the understanding got lost. And that is why religion became a myth. That is why. Because it was not backed up by proper rational understanding. This is what happened in the history. So is Gita a mythological book? Oh, this is quite interesting. Do you know what is this place? Anybody can tell? What's this place? At least. Yeah, Kurukshetra. At this place, this is a banyan tree under which Krishna spoke Gita. It's still there. This tree is still there. 5,000 years ago, Krishna spoke Gita to Arjuna. It's not a myth. It is a historical fact. This place is the Kurukshetra, where Gita was spoken. This is a scientist from Chennai, Madras. He did some research and he found 5,000 years old arrows and spears. And we all know 5,000 years ago in Kurukshetra there was a battle, Mahabharata. People fought. And these are the evidences for that. So Gita is not a mythological book. Somebody spoke when, we don't know, it's just something mythological. It's history, it's evidence, it's a fact. It was spoken and the same book we have now as it is. This is one person, Dr. S.R. Rao. He found Dwarka city in undersea excavations. He recently left his body. You can see this divers who found a wall. This is a big wall of Dwarka city. Krishna made a Dwarka city. He made a city in the sea. This is recorded in scriptures. And this is evidence. It's there. So that a personality named Krishna existed in history. A book named Gita existed in history. And its philosophy, its wisdom is still with us. It's all fact, it's all evidence. It's not in air. Many people have read Gita since then. They benefited, they learned the laws of life. Why so many scriptures praise Gita? Oh, this is a good verse, you can just have a look. Because Gita is a king of education. The most secret of all secret. You know why Gita is called secret of all secret? Because Gita is an open secret. It is there in front of us. You can read it. But to understand that book, you need a little training. So it is an open secret. It's there. But you have to tune your intelligence with it, with this knowledge to understand it. It's purest of all. It gives self-realization. It will help you to understand who you are and how to become happy. Okay, now, this is quite interesting. Just keep a note on this. Why Gita is so unique? Why so many scriptures praise Gita? You see, if you read scriptures, there are two types of scriptures. Scriptures are categorized into two sections. One is decisive, one is informative. Now, what do I mean by that? It's simple. Vedas give you information, but Gita will give you decision. And this is important because Vedas are so big. If you read scriptures, you might get confused. Okay, whether I should do this or this. Who will give decision? Gita. That is why Gita is so important. It will give you decision. You might read so many books, but if you are confused, whom do you ask? Your professor, isn't it? My dear professor, I read so and so and I'm confused. Professor will say, okay, fine, this is the answer, this is how you should answer the question. So professor is giving you decision, your books are giving you information. Gita will give you decision. Now what do I mean by this? Okay, this is, you can just have a look at this. This 18th chapter, 3rd verse, Krishna says, many sages, some learned men declare that all kind of fruitive activities should be given up as faulty. Yet other sages maintain that acts of sacrifice, charity and penance should never be abandoned. Some people say you should do charity, some people say no. Some people say you should do sacrifice, some sages say no. Krishna says, acts of sacrifice, charity, penance are not to be given up. He is giving a decision. This is a decision. Indeed, sacrifice, charity and penance purify even great souls. If you want to be happy, learn these three words. Sacrifice, charity and penance. Sacrifice means don't lead your life for yourself. That's a very bad idea. We are trained to think about ourselves. How will I become happy? Okay. How will it benefit me? If it doesn't benefit me, okay. Finish. No. Sacrifice means thinking about others. Charity means helping others. And penance means austerities. Involuntary pain. Little bit. Just for example, every spiritual person, he has to get up early in the morning. Have you heard? People who practice spirituality, we get up early in the morning. At what time do we get up? We get up at least before sunrise. That is said in scriptures. If you want to be, this is a secret. If you want to always be healthy, if you don't want to see a doctor, get up before sunrise. You will never become unhealthy. This is a secret, small secret. Because I was a doctor, allopathic doctor, physician. And I was an Ayurvedic doctor also. Natural therapy, homeopathy also I have done. And all of those sciences, at least one thing is common. Get up before sunrise. Such a simple rule. Was it taught to you? In your chemistry, PhD, super PhD, super super PhD? No, isn't it? And it should be taught when we were a child. Every day we get up. Why don't people tell us how to lead a life? Why don't people tell us how to talk, how to walk, how to sit? It requires a little bit training. This is all given in Gita. If you read 16th chapter of Gita, Gita will tell you how to speak. Does anybody know how to speak? What are the rules of speaking? Anybody can tell me? Okay, how to speak? Let's ask you. How to speak? Well, you might think this is a crazy question. How to speak? Just speak. But it's not a crazy question. How to speak? Bhagavad Gita trains you, okay. How to speak? Satyam priyam hitam vakyam anudvayega karam. Your speech should have four things. It should be truth, truthful. Everybody likes truth. It should be pleasing to hear. You should not speak anything which is not pleasing. You should speak truth in a way which is pleasing. You can also speak truth in a way which is hard to hear, no? And then satyam priyam hitam, it should be for the welfare of that person. It should help him, not demotivate him. You can speak truth, you can speak in a pleasing manner, but you can speak in such a way that he gets demotivated. My God, I can't do it. And what's the fun of telling, speaking? Should speak according to his level. And anudvayega karam, in such a fashion which will not keep him, give him stress and anxiety. Superb definition of how to speak. So nice. These are the four components. Satyam, priyam, hitam, anudvayega karam. Truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and it should not give stress, anxiety to the other. Beautiful. How to walk? It's given in Gita, how to walk. Can anybody tell how to walk? This is a funny question, isn't it? How to walk? Catwalk I should do or what? I should spread my legs or walk or? Gita says how to walk. Teaches you how to walk. And if you can learn Gita, you can, Prabhupada says, you can become gentleman. You can become gentleman. Everybody will be happy who will be with you, because you are happy. People will learn from you, your every act, your every talk, because you are connected with Gita. Gita will make you perfect in all fields, all respects. So Gita gives decision. Okay, you do this like this. Apply this knowledge and see for yourself. Simple. It's not blind faith. You have to do this. Okay, fine. If you don't do this, we'll kill you. It's not like that. Apply this and see for yourself. What is the proof that pizza is tasty? Everybody eats pizza here, no? Yeah, I should give example of pizza. In India, we give example of gulab jamun or something, but yeah. Okay. What's the proof that pizza is tasty? What's the proof? The proof is in? Eat one pizza and see the taste for yourself, isn't it? I can't prove that it is tasty. Eat and see. That's all. Finish. If you don't taste it, leave it. Forget it. Read Gita. Understand it. Apply it. If you don't find it anything truthful there, leave it. That's all. But don't dismiss it. We are dismissing knowledge. That's blind faith. People say, you are reading Gita, you are religious, you are superstitious. We say, you are superstitious. Without reading, how can you dismiss anything? Isn't it? That's not a good thing. A scientist should read, research, see, observe, experiment, and then see. This is a good thing. Oh, I'll dismiss this. This is Gita. Less letters, more meaning. Concise, but precise. Every verse of Gita is compact. So much information. Every verse of Gita has at least three meanings. One is scientific, one is spiritual, and one is godly. In one verse, we have three levels of meaning. This is the beauty of Sanskrit. If you know Sanskrit, this is the beauty of Sanskrit, especially Gita. How is it? Oh, this might be real shocking for you. Anyway, I'll just tell you now. You see this Sanskrit verse, na sato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sato. In this verse is talking about soul and body. You can just read it. Those who are seers of truth have concluded that of non-existent material body, there is no endurance. Endurance means permanence. Of the eternal soul, there is no change. Simple. This is the spiritual meaning of this verse. There is a scientific meaning of this verse. It says, what is non-existent will not stay. What is non-existent doesn't exist. What exists can never non-exist. So what is this law? What is there, it's always there. What is not there, cannot be there. What is this law in science? Anybody knows? Energy is neither created or... And whatever energy is there in the entire universe, it is there. What is not there, it's not there. You can't increase law of conservation of energy. You can't increase energy, you can't decrease energy. You can change energy, form of one energy into another energy. But you can't increase and you can't decrease. It's a law. This is there in this verse. Who found this law? Who was the founder of this law? Newton? And when did Newton come? 300 years back? When was Gita spoken? 5000 years back. And we have law of conservation of energy here. So perhaps Newton took his conserved laws from Gita or what? It's a research topic. There's a book, 11 Pictures of Time. One scientist in India, C.K. Raju, he's a mathematician. He got a Nobel Prize now. He has done some research. He said that all these laws which Newton found, he got this knowledge from it was translated from Indian scriptures. I told knowledge went from India to Muslim country to Christianity. They had access to all these things and they read that and they got the principles of all these laws from there. Law of gravitation is there in scriptures. It is called Sankarshan. Optics is there in Vedas. There's so many things. Gita is complete knowledge. You see this example, you see this diagram, this is a tree and there's a reflection. This is a beautiful example in Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, first verse. Gita is comparing this entire world to be an inverted tree. Why? This river, where do you get an inverted tree? As a reflection in the river, isn't it? That river represents desires. And in that desires, there's a reflection of reality. And that reflection is an illusion. So Gita gives an example. Whatever is, you see this word, what is this remote control? It's a desire. You think it's remote control? It's desire. This is how wise people see. Wise people can see entire picture. Fools, they'll see just this object. It makes a difference. So they can see this is a desire. People desired this, it is there. So Gita helps you to understand. Look behind the scene. Don't be involved in the movie. Look behind what is there. And behind this word, what is their desires? We desire and create a word out of it. Around ourselves, around people. And sometimes we desire wrong, sometimes good. Whenever we desire wrong, we create problem for ourselves and for others. And that's... Okay, I talked about complete knowledge. You might say, how Gita is complete knowledge? Gita is science. It's a beautiful definition of science. Gita says science is cause and effect. Such a beautiful definition. Science means if you have an effect, there should be cause. Simple. We define science as observation... Observation... Experimentation, hypothesis, experimentation, then theory, isn't it? Francis Bacon. But Gita defines science as cause and effect. Simple. Anywhere you have effect, find the cause. Anything you have cause, find the effect. They should be linked together. That is science. Simple definition. And good, actually good. Many philosophers, they argue that this definition is more appropriate than observation and experimentation and theories. Because you can experiment, you can have observations, but you can have multiple theories for one set of observation, isn't it? We had electrons, same experiments, we had electrons. Now we have same experiments, but electrons are the electron cloud. Things are changing. Things are changing. So experiments, evidences can be interpreted. That's the point. So that system of defining, it's okay, but this system is good. Gita defines philosophy. This is great. We had three philosophers who changed philosophy, who brought revolution. Descartes, Wittgenstein, Thomas Kuhn. What philosophy they gave, that is already there in Gita. René Descartes talked about decision, dualism, mind and body. Ludwig Wittgenstein talks about definition, define the terms. Thomas Kuhn defines about distinction, transcendence and matter. Gita talks about all three. All the three paradigms. I'm not going to go into details, but I'm just giving you a glimpse how Gita is a philosophical book. Gita is psychology. In one verse, you have entire psychology. You can see this. Every word of Gita will lead to a branch of psychology. Adhisthanam tatha karta karanam cha pritak vidham vividesh cha pritak chaishta devam prakarte maashrita. You know subconscious mind, Sigmund Freud? He was the founder, he gave this concept, 8, super 8, subconscious. Is right there in Gita, last, Daivam. Is there? What to do? Is there in Taittiriya Upanishad, subconscious, concept of subconscious? All knowledge is coming from Bhagavad Gita. It's there. Of course, credit has to be given to this book. That's another point. Medicine. Gita says, medicine is all to do with balance. If you balance your life, balance is the best medicine. Such a good definition. If you balance your life, eating, sleeping, recreation, you have no disease. Beautiful definition. Why do you need medicines? You take the medicine of balance. Balance your life. Simple. So great. Morals and laws. Gita talks about personal conduct, social norms and punishment in 16th chapter. Read this chapter, 16th chapter. It's talking about civil laws, criminal laws, principles, of course not details. You can't just make a law book out of Gita, but principles it's talking about. And then finally, Gita talks about virtue, knowledge and happiness. This is what we are after. We want virtue, we want good qualities, we want to be a good person, we want to be knowledgeable and we want to be happy. So Gita talks. First 6 chapters talks about virtue, which is called as Karma Yoga. Second 6 chapters talks about happiness, which is Bhakti Yoga. And third 6 chapters talk about Jnana Yoga, knowledge. And Gita does a surprising thing. It combines all the three, knowledge, virtue and happiness. And it tells us the aim of all knowledge, all happiness, all virtues is love of God. This is the aim of life. If you're a good person, the aim of being good is to understand God. Because God is all good. And if you want to understand God who is all good, you have to be good. The aim of all happiness is to be happy, peaceful, and that peace and satisfaction, when your mind is settled, then you should meditate on God. A mind which is full of desires and anxieties, it cannot understand God. It's difficult. You have to be purified. So that's the aim of happiness and knowledge. All knowledge should help you to lead to understand God and develop love for Him. This is what is Gita. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. For those of you who have questions, we passed around sheets of paper, and if you have any questions, please pass them out.
Hare Krishna.